This table has taken a turn for the worse, rock bottom, over the edge. It's not like it hurts that much anyway. That's the Academy is. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. Things have taken a turn for the worse for your Toronto Blue Jays, who are doing everything they can to replicate that 2008 team that was pretty good but missed a lot of opportunities, underperformed on offense, and ultimately missed the playoffs. That is the same 2008 Blue Jays team that had the 20-game streak of not scoring six runs that this year's team just matched. Guess what that year's team did after they broke that streak and finally scored six? They scored a total of four runs over their next four games. This year's team broke that streak on Monday. Guess what they did after that? They have scored two runs total in two games. They have a very strong case as the worst performing offense in baseball right now among teams that are actually trying to win baseball games. The Chicago White Sox and Oakland Athletics, the only teams in the league averaging fewer runs per game. One of those teams is headed for an historic territory of bad. They can only beat the Tampa Bay Rays, apparently. Oakland may be a little better than we thought, but their owner is hijacking the team and not investing in that offense. So we'll see if that comes down to earth. And those are the only two teams worse than the Blue Jays in terms of runs per game right now. You can look at some stats that maybe make you feel a little bit better process-wise. Hey, Jays are dead last in hitting with runners in scoring position, but all their plate discipline and swing decision stuff is good underneath. Well, guess what? They can't get guys on base anyway. They are 30th in OPS with runners in scoring position and 24th in opportunities with runners in scoring position. So even if they were hitting well in those scenarios, there would still be a bit of a problem here. It is early, as John Schneider will tell you, as a lot of people on Blue Jays Twitter and who cover the team will tell you, May 1st is still pretty early. However, it's becoming a pretty big thing here. The Jays are back to two games under 500. They've been outscored by 31 runs in 32 games, which we know is generally a stronger indicator of what is to come than just your record is. So even if you wanted to be like, hey, well, you know, maybe underlying they've been better, they have not. The offense will come around a little bit. The pitching will maybe even be a little bit better. But right now, they're in a bad way. Let's talk about it. Actually, just a note, at 11:30, we're going to talk to Jeff Ponce of Baseball America. We're going to go to the prospect side of things because the Major League team is not fun to talk about right now. So we're going to talk about the Aurelvises, some guys performing well at AA right now, like Josh Kosevich, and someone who had a midseason turnaround last year in Adam Macko that Shai Davidi of Sportsnet.ca wrote about. Shai Davidi joins us now. Shai, good morning.
Good morning, Blake. How's it going?
You know, been better. I prefer to cover, I would prefer to do like a post-game show where there's an actual offensive event to talk about. There is not. The Jays lost 6-1 yesterday, and they come up on the wrong side of that series. High level, how are you feeling about where this team's at right now?
Look, it's funny. I just finished recording an ATL with Ben Nicholson Smith just moments ago, and we just spent about an hour plus dissecting this in a number of different ways. I think that in some ways they're fortunate to be 15-17 given how the offense has performed so far. I think that really speaks to the quality of pitching that they have. And I know some of their pitching numbers aren't great, but I do think that there's still, on both sides of the ball, a lot of normalization for still to happen for this team. And I really do think that we would be having a different conversation about this team right now if you were just didn't know about 2023, right?
Yeah.
But we do know about 2023, and a lot of this season feels like this is just 2023. This is the seventh month of the 2023 regular season, and that's why you can't. It's hard to look at the offensive performance in a vacuum, or just say like this could be some April small size randomness. But I was looking through some numbers, and I heard some of the teams that you were mentioning with the Jays there, and I'll just throw this out there. So the Jays are tied for fourth fewest runs in the majors with a team that scored at 111 runs. The Jays have a 670 OPS compared to that team's 649 OPS. The Jays have a better batting average, better OBP, better slugging, have more walks and far fewer strikeouts than that team. Would you be giving up on the Seattle Mariners right now?
On the offensive side, yeah, a little bit. I'm a little out on the merit. That's a bad lineup on paper, but they're a very good pitching staff. They're a team that's going to be in the playoff mix still because of the strength of their pitching and run prevention.
And, you know, I still think there's still a bit of upside in that lineup there as
Julio,
well.
Julio,
right?
For sure.
Julio's definitely not going to have that season. And I think you can say a lot of the same things about the Blue Jays right now. And so, it's been a maddening opening month for this team. I think Chris Bassitt said it best that, like, everybody's just frustrated. They have played some good quality teams, but you're going to have to beat good teams if you want to get to the playoffs. So that can't be an excuse alone. But they're 15-17 with minimal contributions from Bo, Vlad, and Springer.
Yeah.
And so you can look at it and say, okay, well, that's not going to happen the whole year. Like, those guys are going to get their numbers one way or the other. And, you know, Danny Jansen is just returning to the lineup, and he's going to add to this group. And, you know, maybe Dalton Varsho, is going to be a better version of himself. Like, there are reasons to look at it, say, he can come around. But, you know, if we're still having this conversation on June 2nd as opposed to May 2nd, then that's a really worrying spot for this team.
It's tough, and you're right. Like, some of this stuff is going to normalize. Like I mentioned, the runners in scoring position stuff. Like, we did that last year, and then there was a 6-week stretch in the middle of the season where they were the best team in the league hitting with runners in scoring position, and they ended the season right around where you'd expect. It's noisy, but you're right. The thing that you said that I think fans are feeling the most is that you can't separate this from 2023, because the group is mostly the same. The fans are certainly the same. The jersey is the same. So whether that's, you know, fair or not at the individual level, when you look at, oh, well, Bo's going through this, is it fair for him to wear, you know, what happened last year? Maybe not. But from the fan perspective and at the team level, I certainly understand it. And then there's also a component of, you know, the more and more this extends on, the more we have to adjust kind of our priors or our, you know, what we believe to be the true talent level of some of these guys. You know, Vlad is in, you know, the worst like 30 game stretch of his career outside of one stretch in early May to early June last season. So, you know, if the valleys are lower, does that change what we think overall if it happens twice in a calendar year? George Springer's 34, you know, how are we adjusting for that? So I understand the frustration on that side. John Schneider spoke about this last night, and he got asked, what would you say to fans? And he said, they're going to get bored of me saying the same thing. It's going to come. It's May 1st. We will be better. That's what I can say, and I would hope our fans trust that we have really good players. They're not performing up to expectations. You also mentioned the Chris Bassitt comment after the game, and Chris Bassitt was talking a little bit about himself, but a little bit in general, and said, beyond frustrated about what the hell's going on. That included his note that he has a 5.45 ERA and has only had one bad game, which is true. That's an unfortunate Dodgers inflated ERA. But I guess I set this up, and I mentioned the John Schneider and Chris Bassitt quotes, and I know you had a quote from Jose Berríos after Tuesday's game as well, that kind of, to me, right, is like, well, I made one mistake the whole game, and I made one mistake the last time we played the Royals, and we went 0-2 in those games because that's all you can make right now. Do you sense the frustration around the team and in the room as well?
Yeah, but I mean, it's not, it's the normal kind of frustration that any time, like, I mean, if you're not frustrated, then don't be in the big leagues, right? Like, I think that you should. I think it's a sign of how much everybody cares and how much everybody believes in the team that they have, because they should be better. It's a really weird month, right? Like, their expected win-loss is very different from their actual win-loss. They've scored 3 runs or fewer 18 times in 32 games, and yet they're still only 2 games under 500 at 15-17, right? Like, not a lot that's happened this month makes a lot of sense. And so I think everybody's sort of looking around being like, well, why isn't this happening? And like, the strength of competition is one thing, you know, aside from the Rockies, and it's weird to say to include the Kansas City Royals in this, but you know, like, I mean,
they're pretty good,
really good teams. So, yeah, the Royals are really good, and you know, their pitching is a lot better. And Cole Ragans is, looks like a Cy Young candidate, and as he did last season, and he's maintained that. And Bobby Witt Jr. is taking a step forward, and they've got some guys who grind and they eke out just enough. They haven't played bad teams. They've played good teams. And so you would like to see them be better. But if this is the Jays sort of at their worst, and you know, some of the numbers on the pitching side don't totally match up to some of the way that we think about them so far, all those things should normalize. Like, if that's their worst stretch of the season against quality opposition, then that could be okay. But again, it's been a long time that this has happened, so it's hard to take it at face value. Is like the trust us. It's hard to believe in that, and I think that's true for everybody. I think Blue Jays players just want to see this come around because they feel that they're far better than what they're showing, but it's not happening that way.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one in the press box. It's a tough one in the seats. It's a tough one in the dugout and the clubhouse. I'm sure. And those, you know, quality of competition things you're mentioning, I did want to mention, in addition to just looking at the teams on the page and looking at the records, we can try to quantify a little bit of how good is the pitching that they faced. TJ Stats on Twitter, Thomas Nestico, has done that and looked at, hey, what's the average stuff plus that a team is facing, that a player is facing? And this isn't going to make anyone feel better right now, but there is this is something that, in addition to feeling like they've faced a lot of good pitching, we can quantify that the Jays have, by stuff plus metrics, they have faced the second hardest pitching on a per pitch basis in all of baseball. And Vlad is number one. Vlad's faced the hardest diet of pitching in baseball so far this year. Again, not going to make you feel better in the moment, but these are relevant factors here. I guess the concern would be, you know, even if this stuff rounds out, there is a potential concern. There are games here in April that maybe you could have or should have won that are not in your win column. I wonder, too, Shy, is there an effect of this is putting an awful lot of pressure game to game on the pitching staff, both the starters and the bullpen? Basically, you've got to be perfect, it feels like, a lot of nights for the Blue Jays to win games.
And I think that is a really good point, Blake, because that's absolutely the case. And, you know, the other thing to think about is that right now there's a bit of a pressure point too, because they don't have a fifth starter. We assume it's going to be Alek Manoah on Sunday, but we don't know that for a certainty yet. And even if it is Alek Manoah, what is Alek Manoah going to be? We don't know. And the Blue Jays certainly have reason to be optimistic based on the uptick in his stuff and the last performance, but it's hard to count that as a given. And if that doesn't work out, they don't really have another option for that fifth spot in the rotation right now. So that could be a concern. Now, it kind of happens at a good time with a bunch of off days ahead. So there's some extra rest built in for everyone in the rotation. It's a good time for that to happen. But if that fifth spot doesn't stabilize, and you don't get the offense suddenly doing some heavy lifting on a consistent basis, I mean, just think how much extra pressure that is on the rotation, on the four guys who have already carried a huge load, and on some of their, you know, key relievers. You think about how often that Jimmy Garcia has pitched, and Jordan Romano since he's returned, and Eric Swanson, and Chad Green's on the IL, but the Jays were obviously using him a fair bit. Like, these guys, they just haven't gotten a break. And you need some time where, you know, it's not every pitch is sort of life or death in the game. And that hasn't been there for this team. And there is a toll to that. So you're right. It's sort of an area of concern moving forward. But there are also points in time where you have to just win in different ways. And right now, this is the way that the Blue Jays have to win.
Yeah, it's a lot of 5-2 wins. It's funny. I looked at the. I was trying to quantify again this what we're talking about, and my instinct is to let's see if the numbers back up what I'm feeling. And the Jays bullpen actually has the lowest average leverage when they're in a game, but it's because the Jays haven't led in very many games. Like those metrics are going to favor if you're protecting a lead versus trying to keep a deficit close. And the Jays only have 3 1-run wins this season. They have won by a handful of runs and then been trailing in most of their games. But yeah, you look at the Garcia, it feels like Swanson can't get in a groove because every time he comes in, it's a huge spot. And if you miss by, half an inch with that splitter, you're getting punished for it. Nate Pearson goes from having the second save of his career to making what I thought was actually, I thought Nate Pearson got jobbed a little bit last night. I know that the pitch he threw Michael Massey for the home run was the exact pitch he struck him out on to end the game the other day. It just left a little too much of the plate. But the two hits before that were, pretty well executed, just good pieces of hit. It won a very soft single and the other one a tough pitch to hit. Anyway, you mentioned there that, hey, it's potentially coming here where maybe it's a 4-man rotation. Maybe Alek Manoah is being asked to fill some of this role. Let's talk about it because you and I and David Singh kind of sat there on Tuesday when we found out the Yariel Rodriguez news and we went through what the schedule looks like the next little bit. And you could get as far as May 21st with only needing one bullpen day. But that is if you wanted to use every off day to reshuffle the rotation. Everyone's pitching on normal rest. Nobody gets that extra day off that an off day would normally provide you. So you have 3 off days in an 8-day stretch and then another one coming up a week after that. So you could, again, get to the 21st only needing one bullpen day or one fifth starter day. Is that something that you would consider, Shai, similar to what they did last year when they ran a 4-man rotation with the odd Trevor Richards led bullpen day? Would your lean be toward get a fifth guy in here, make sure Kikuchi, Gausman, Berríos, Bassett are getting that extra day off here and there? Look, we're going to find out by Sunday what they're actually going to decide. But as you went through this schedule, as you went through this exercise, how did you feel about it?
So to me, it was more just talking to people. And I thought it was really interesting, Jose Berríos's take on the matter. And, he said, look, the off days are, his exact words were especially important for the pitchers, especially given how much of a load that they take on themselves. And then, but at the same time, he was like, whatever the team needs of us, we'll do whatever it takes. We're Blue Jays. We do whatever the team needs, which is obviously the mentality you want your guy to have. But last year took a toll on them, right? And in ideal circumstances, you're not asking your stars to do that. Like, I know there are some teams who are having to get creative with their fifth starting spot around the majors because they just don't have 5 starters that they trust right now. But you've got 4 guys that you need to optimize. And so do you want to continue to do this to them? And then that there's going to be something, a price to pay in July and August and September when you really need these guys to be going. I tend to err on the side of not asking them to do that again. But, the one piece, and really the Blue Jays and Alek Manoah really know this, as long as you're not doing it at Alek Manoah's expense, like if all the signs are pointing to him being ready enough to do this, then I think that's the smartest route to go. But they they have to be fair to Manoah here, right? Because, he's made a ton of progress. You don't want to undo that by rushing him back, but opportunity is meeting need. His rehab assignment expires on Monday, but you're going to have to make a move one way or the other. And if you option him, which is the two ways you can resolve the rehab assignment is by activating him from the IL or by optioning him. If you option, then you lose him for 15 days unless someone else goes on the injured list. So I think just from a timing perspective, all those pieces, you end up with Manoah in the rotation. And so I think ultimately that's best for, it's definitely better for the other four guys in the rotation, and, you know, we'll see whether it's the right thing for Alec or not.
Yeah, and the other component, too, is, you know, if you are a little... And look, if you're worried about how Alec Manoah is going to perform too much, maybe that answers the question for you. But if you do want an easier landing spot, getting that first start back against the Washington Nationals on Sunday is certainly preferable to, you know, he's got to face the Phillies or even the Twins, who are hitting the ball pretty well and are lefty-heavy in the following series. So maybe you do want to... see that. By the way, Shai, you and I kind of watched that game while the Jays game was going on the other day. It was Alec Manoah against Paul Skenes, which is an unfair comparison for Alec Manoah because Paul Skenes is throwing like 101, and like it was the first time all season he allowed consecutive hits. But Manoah did look pretty good. For anyone who missed it, he struck out 12 over six innings, threw 62 of his 92 pitches for strikes. He got 19 whiffs on 39 swings, which is a really good whiff rate. Had a really good called plus swinging strike rate. Sat 93, touched 96, was dropping the slider in back foot to lefties in a way that you're pretty confident in. Some smaller issues, you know, had trouble spotting the fastball up in the zone when he was trying to raise the eye level or get some chase at the top of the zone. Certainly wasn't a perfect appearance, but compared to his prior AAA starts that we'd gotten to see, a really nice step forward. So we'll see how this resolves itself. There are other options. You know, Paolo Espino is on the 40-man, although he has an ERA over 6 and a whip over 2 at AAA right now. I've gotten a few questions about, are there any, you know, free agents out there? The answer to that is that, well, probably those guys would need a ramp-up period anyway, but the class of free agent starter right now is like Zach Greinke, Matt Boyd, Rich Hill, Vince Velasquez, Noah Syndergaard, Madison Bumgarner. Those are the names that I could come up with who are out there and not officially retired. Yesterday was also the opt-out date for veteran guys who are on minor league deals and could choose to opt out. No pitchers of note became free agents from that. So this is going to be an internal thing, Shai. Before I let you go here, I want to get really analytic here. I want to get really into the math, really into the metrics, and talk about hot dogs per fan. The stat that you've been creating and tweaking and pushing. We had a down night on Tuesday in terms of hot dogs per fan at Rogers Center, underperformed relative to expected hot dogs per fan. The New York Mets had their own hot dog night on Wednesday and outperformed Blue Jays fans on a hot dog per fan basis. What are you seeing in the hot dog metrics right now? What's your eye on next Tuesday home game?
Well, it's kind of funny because you have been workshopping a weighted expected hot dog metric, which just I didn't think, no pun intended, pass the mustard just yet. But I thought it was interesting, the last one, there was a dip in the dogs per fan, but it was also the shortest hot dog night of the season. It was a 219 game time. The first two dates had 253 and 256. So going to try to find a way to maybe create a dogs per minute metric for the next time. And maybe that will be a way to get a more accurate read on consumption. We have to kind of figure out a few things in terms of do sales begin at a consistent time during pregame every day? Like, how do you factor that in? Because the consumption, it occurs, or a good chunk of the consumption occurs before first pitch is even thrown. So I just want to make sure that's accounted for fairly and accurately, but we'll see. Maybe we'll have another number up there the next time we get the next hot dog report.
Yeah, the next Tuesday home game is not until the 21st when the White Sox are in town. So that's the next time the Jays play a bad team too, by the way. So get used to more conversations about the quality of competition they face. This is life on the Blue Jays schedule in the first third of the season here. Shai, last one for you. How confident are we in the accuracy of those hot dog numbers that are being reported? Because those seem like pretty high. Like, I'm in there and the gates have just opened, and I've joked about this before, but, you know, the numbers get pretty high pretty early.
Yeah, I would trust is a lot of people are coming in hot, and right, they want to get their hot dogs early. I can't say that I've been in the bowels of the stadium and I've seen the just trays upon trays upon trays upon trays of hot dog buns in preparation for these nights. So,
also, you can smell it walking around. Like, when we're there early and like we go down to the field level, like, it smells like hot dogs on Tuesdays. The whole arena does.
Yeah, I mean, people are working hard, and, you know, much respect to the people who are serving up, you know, 50, 60K hot dogs. That's a lot of work, and you're making a lot of fans happy, apparently, although I imagine some people have regrets the next day.
I would imagine they would, but probably no more than eating those like 18-inch long hot dogs either. Shai, it's been a lot of fun seeing you track that and helping you come up with some of these metrics. So keep up the great work with that. Keep up all the great work at sportsnet.ca as well. And thanks for taking the time this morning.
Yeah, appreciate it. Blake, talk soon, dude.
Shai Davidi, king of the hot dog metrics down at Rogers Center. Had a good piece Tuesday after the game. Looking at, you know, that loss and some of Jose Berríos' frustration with, hey, making one bad pitch. That's twice in a row against the Royals. He's made one bad pitch and wasn't even that, like, okay, this one was a bad one. The one in the rain-shortened game wasn't even that bad a pitch, just a nice piece of hitting from, I believe it was Sal Perez in that game. And that's it. That sometimes right now, that is all that the Blue Jays can afford is one bad pitch. It's frustrating. Hot dog silliness aside, it's a grind right now for the Blue Jays. And I really do feel like there is an impact. Maybe we can't measure it, but on this idea that every Blue Jays start, the starter basically feels they have to be perfect. If this Blue Jays team, and they haven't said that, I'm assuming, which is, you know, hopefully fair in this case. But yeah, if your offense isn't scoring, if you're 28th in the league and in runs per game and you're 25th or 24th in total runs, and you're in the 20s for slugging percentage and home runs and things like that, it would make a lot of sense if your starting pitching staff really feels the pressure of having to be close to perfect every night to give you a chance to win it, and your bullpen feels the same. Shai and I kind of zoomed through it there, but the options the Blue Jays are facing here with Yariel Rodriguez on the IL, I mentioned you could get to the 21st with only one bullpen day. That would, again, require everyone is starting on normal rest. You're using those off days to, you know, kind of push everyone forward a day in the rotation, not keeping guys on turn, but not keeping guys on their specific days of rest, which has a risk. But you would go off day today. You would go Kikuchi, Gausman, Berríos on the weekend. Monday off, Bassett, Kikuchi. Thursday off, Gausman, Berríos, Bassett, Kikuchi. And then you'd have a day on May 14th where you needed a bullpen day or a fifth starter. But then because you have the 16th off as well, you wouldn't need one again until the 21st. That's as long as you can delay it. They have a 13-game in 13-day stretch from May 17th to 29th. So you're going to need a fifth starter two or three times in there. You certainly don't want to go a whole month with using your four starters like this, especially since you did it last year and got very, very fortunate with their health and things like that. But it is possible if they decide Alek Manoah needs another rehab start or maybe some just proper AAA optioned time rather than activating him when they need to make that decision on Monday. And again, right now, because you only have four starters, you can carry a ninth bullpen guy. That maybe helps with bullpen days. That maybe helps keep guys, maybe a guy only throws 95 pitches instead of 105 and things like that. But there's not a, this really highlights the lack of depth in the organization where, you know, at the start of the season, this organization thought maybe Wes Parsons was a guy. Wes Parsons is not a guy. I did bite on the Mitch White pump fake, the velocity being up and all the stuff metrics being better in spring training. And I was a guy who thought Mitch White was a good pitcher when he came over from the Dodgers. I have been proven so far incorrect on that one, but he's not in the organization anymore either. Yariel Rodriguez is on the IL. Alek Manoah is on a rehab assignment. Ricky Tiedemann is on the IL. Chad Dallas, who was not on the 40-man, but maybe he was one of those next wave of pitching depth. He is not pitching particularly well at AAA. So yeah, there's not a, and then I mentioned some of those free agent names out there, Zach Greinke, Matt Boyd, Rich Hill, Noah Syndergaard, Vince Velasquez, Madison Bumgarner. Like, you're talking about guys who got cut in the middle of last year, had ERAs north of five, and probably aren't stretched out to give you four or five innings at this point. So, you know, certainly worth kicking the tires on guys like that for AAA depth. So if this comes up again later in the season, you have more options there, similar to what they did with Wes Parsons last year. But yeah, no imminent help. So it's going to be Alek Manoah. It's going to be a four-man rotation for a little bit. That also highlights that this is not the strongest of farm systems on the pitching side. Part of that is, you know, Tiedemann's hurt. Brandon Barriera is undergoing the hybrid Tommy John plus brace procedure on his arm. Landon Moraitis is hurt. But this isn't an organization that had great farm depth on the pitching side generally heading into this year. So let's take a break.
Let's talk to our main Jays prospect guy, Jeff Ponce of Baseball America. He does the Blue Jays write-ups for Baseball America. He is New Hampshire-based, so he sees the AA Fisher Cats a lot. He was down at Blue Jays spring training. Let's check in with him. It won't all be bad because Aurelvis Martinez is killing it. Josh Kosevich has maybe changed his outlook in his first little taste of AA here. Adam Macko looks pretty good down at AA. Jeff Ponce of Baseball America to look at the prospect side of the Blue Jays as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays lose again last night, 6-1, down to 15-17. Are things going a little better on the farm? Individually, maybe, but the pitching depth, as we just covered, with a hole in the fifth rotation spot right now, not exactly a lot of guys knocking at the door on the pitching side in the minors. Let's talk to Jeff Ponce of Baseball America about it. Jeff, good morning. Thanks for doing this. Nice to see you. First one of the season on the show. Welcome back.
Yeah, man. Excited to be back on the air with you guys and talking about the Blue Jays, though. Unfortunately, it has not been the start to the season I think we all hoped.
No, it hasn't. And look, we'll start on the pitching side here. We'll start with the negative before we hit a couple positives toward the end. The Jays have a hole in the fifth rotation spot right now. And that was, you know, maybe supposed to be Alec Manoah's, and then it was Bowden Francis's, and then it was Yariel Rodriguez's. And all three of those guys are on the IL. And then you looked and it was like, well, maybe Ricky Tiedemann. He's on the IL as well. They've lost a couple other guys from the org. But this is also a farm system that didn't have a lot of pitching depth at the high levels yet anyway. Where are we in terms of, especially now that Brandon Barriera is undergoing the hybrid Tommy John surgery, Landon Marotis is on the IL as well, and we're awaiting next steps there. How do you assess the Jays' pitching depth through the farm overall?
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate because, you know, I spent about 4 weeks down in spring training. A lot of that time was spent at the Dunedin complex. I saw the entirety pretty much of their healthy staff. I saw Barriera before he got injured. Saw Landon Marotis, and I would say he was one of the standout arms that I saw across all the different complexes. On the west coast of Florida, I was down there for a month, so I saw pretty much every team's backfield games a few times. And he was a standout. I thought he was a guy that, you know, potentially could be sort of like a Tiedemann-esque sort of find where, you know, a guy outside the top two rounds that turns out to be a legitimate top 10 prospect for them in the system. He actually is probably going to slide into the top 10. Some of that is David Schneider graduating. Some of that is Brandon Barriera getting that hybrid surgery and could be out for quite a long time. The recovery there is, potentially a little bit longer than your typical Tommy John surgery. One name that I will call out that's in the lower levels that I think is really showing some improvement is Fernando Perez. He's pitched really well this season. Was a guy that, you know, pitched well in the complex last year. I think he made some headlines when he was part of that combined no-hitter. It's a guy whose stuff has taken a pretty tremendous jump. The fastball velocity is up a few miles per hour. He's got, you know, a trio of good secondaries, a really good changeup that was eating up a lot of top prospects on some of those backfield games. So he's a guy that I do have some confidence in. The issue is you're looking at a pitcher here that's probably 3-4 years away for major league impact, which is not what the Jays need right now. And you look at the upper minors, you know, there's some guys who have performed. I think a lot of them really fall into the categories of more relief type roles. And then you maybe have some guys like, you know, Adam Macko, who's looked pretty good at AA so far this season, has a deep pitch mix, I think could potentially be in the Jays plans, but probably not till later this season or early at some point next year. But there's no sort of imminent replacement in AAA Buffalo right now, which I think is a bit of a concern.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, we look at the Baseball America top 30, and I know these things are always in flux, but a handful of the pitchers on there are already relievers, right? Like Connor Cook's on there, and I think he's going to be a guy in the bullpen at some point this year, not off to the best of starts. But when your number 10 prospect overall is a reliever, and then what is it? I think four more of your top 30 prospects on the pitching side are already relievers. It's hard to get too excited. Like even if Hagen Danner, Mason Flaherty, Hayden Yeager, TJ Brock, like all these guys have future major league roles. They're not guys knocking on the door to start. And a lot of them are already relievers at AAA. So yeah, a little bit of a concern there. You mentioned Fernando Perez. He's in Dunedin. If anyone is looking to keep an eye on him, he's made four starts here with a nice start from a K to walk
ratio. Another name that I know you're high on and is starting the season in high A is Kendry Rojas. He was kind of, maybe a higher riser throughout last season, spent most of the year at A ball with Dunedin, posted a sub four ERA and off to an okay start here through two appearances. But he's the highest ranking non-Tiedemann pitching prospect he's the highest ranking healthy pitching prospect on the Baseball America top 30 for the Jays. What are we looking for from Rojas? Still just 21 and starting the year in high A.
Yeah, he's a really projectable left-hander. When you're looking at a pitcher like this, I think the biggest question mark, and it was kind of what we were keeping an eye on, we were down there in spring training, was, is the velocity up a little bit? In the prospect game, he did show some additional velocity. In his starts, it was back to sort of low 90s. It's pretty good shape. He's got some deceptive qualities. It's a good slider. There's a changeup there as well. You know, I think overall, you're looking at a guy who projects as a potential back-end starting pitching prospect. If, you know, things move along, he adds a little bit more velocity, continues with strike throwing, and just, you know, being effective in terms of getting in and out of innings, being efficient, which is a huge part of starting pitching. You know, it's great to have guys who can blow the world away, but I think one of the big question marks beyond the injuries with Tiedemann is he's just been inefficient for the better part of 2 years now since that really robust start across the A ball levels. We really haven't seen that efficient Ricky, maybe for a small snippet in the Arizona Fall League. But overall, I mean, I think you look at a guy like Rojas and you're really looking 2-3 years down the road and you're hoping that he physically matures, is able to add some of that power without, you know, sort of sacrificing the things that make him good now.
Okay, so that's, you know, a couple years away, maybe, emergency situation. Maybe Chad Dallas is next up because he's in AAA, even though he's not pitching pretty well. But it does sound like among the healthy group, the next guy to get excited about within a maybe late this year and certainly next year timeline is Adam Macko, who the Blue Jays picked up as part of the Eric Swanson, Teoscar Hernandez trade. Got off to a rough start last year. And I guess when you see a guy off to a good start this year, you saw him and he looked good at spring. How much extra weight do you put on that when you and I talked about late last year? It looked like he was starting to figure some things out. So the fact that it started to happen last year and it's building on that, how much extra does that kind of put what Macko's doing on your radar?
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing with Macko is he's got a really unusual background. He's, you know, grew up in Europe. Was born, I think, in Slovakia. And then moved to Ireland, actually, and that's sort of where he really picked up baseball. Then moved to Canada, and, you know, the story goes, obviously, was acquired by the Blue Jays.
He's Canadian, to be clear. We're claiming him as Canadian on a Canadian baseball show.
Left-hander, really good pitch shapes in terms of the fastball. The velocity's right there at 93 to 94. He'll pop a 95, 96 at peak. He gets ride. He gets run. You know, it's a bat-missing style of fastball. And then you factor in, you know, his secondaries. And one of the things that's interesting about Macko is he has the ability to mix a variety of shapes. He's got a cutter. He's got, you know, more of a baby sort of sweeper slider. He's got a curveball. He mixes a changeup as well. You know, so he can really change eye levels on hitters. You know, he's got stuff that moves to the right, moves up, moves down, moves to the left. So it's a really difficult, uncomfortable at bat. And we've seen some of that more precision out of Macko. And just, I think, understanding his sequencing and some of those things in terms of using that big pitch arsenal to his advantage. He's been one of the more impressive pitchers I've seen in Double A so far.
He's also a guy who I know you've written about before was a command guy. Despite being a command guy, had some high walk rates in the earlier parts of the minors. And now that's down to a single digit walk rate to start this season. So that's potentially encouraging. I want to stay with the positives here because it has been a generally negative show today. So there is another player on that New Hampshire team who is worth keeping an eye on, and that's Josh Kosevich, who was a second round pick the other year. He was expected to be, I think you and I talked about him post draft, and it was like, yeah, he's a very typical Blue Jays draft pick in the second, third, fourth round type of, hey, good bat to ball skill, some positional versatility, should be quick through the minors. But Kosevich is a guy that, despite, you know, we're talking about 5 home runs over 600 plate appearances in 3 partial minor league seasons here, not a ton of pop, but a guy that you had mentioned to me and a guy who's off to a really good start here at Double A.
Yeah, I think when you look at that team, as you said, there's, a lack of a ton of power hitters in this organization, particularly outside of Buffalo and, some of the guys down there in Dunedin right now, where there is some decent power. And I think we'll see some of that in the complex level. But the thing with Kasevich that I really like, it's just he grinds out at bats. Every single at bat, he's not a guy that's going to be fooled very often. There's not a lot of swing and miss. If you try to sneak something by him in the zone, he's going to put it into play. Is he a power hitter long-term? No. I do think that, you could be looking at a guy that's more like 10 to 12 home runs, but hits for a high average, can hit at the top of the lineup, get on base, work counts, make pitchers work. And he's really good defensively. He's an above average defensive shortstop. He could play third base in a pinch, can play second base without a problem. So I think he's kind of in the mold of a lot of these guys we've seen come up for the Blue Jays over the last couple of years. But ultimately, I think the defense is a little bit better. The hit tool is a little bit better than maybe like a Leo Jimenez or one of those types that aren't too far away. So, and he's got a legitimate shot to play shortstop long term. So I think he's an interesting player. Is he a star? No. I think the upside here is just an everyday regular that, does the right things and maybe hits toward the back of the lineup if you still got some big boppers at the top.
And look, the Jays like guys like that who can put a bat on a ball and play, give some positional versatility. They paid Isaiah Kiner-Falefa $15 million over 2 years to be that kind of guy. Ernie Clement has a full-time role with this team and made Santiago Espinal kind of tradable at the end of spring training there. So they do like this type of guy. And yeah, the shortstop report is encouraging because, anytime you see a guy bouncing around infield spots, and I know he was like, he was teammates with Arelvis, and at one point I think, he overlapped with like Tucker Tolman, a lot of guys who are bouncing around and playing multiple positions. So it's hard to tell sometimes, is this guy not good enough at shortstop and that's why he's bouncing around? Or is he bouncing around because the team wants to see other guys in that position? So good to hear that he's, you'd obviously prefer a guy be able to handle shortstop than not. So I want to pivot this to two of those other guys that I'm talking about who bounced around positionally, but more because they don't have maybe a natural position. Like Addison Barger, the fact that he was playing shortstop like a calendar year ago, when you see him now, is very amusing because he's like a large corner infielder or large corner outfielder. I know he's only 6 feet tall, but he is a big jack dude who does not look like he's playing shortstop. The Jays have used him now in left and right and third base. He had played some second base in AAA as well. Have you gotten to see any of his plate appearances at the majors so far, by the way?
Yeah, I've gotten to see a few plate appearances, and I got a series with him here in Worcester, not too far down the road from me, prior to the call-up.
Yeah.
So got to sort of see it in the flesh. He's continued to progress just physically over the last couple of years. I think the real encouraging thing for me with Barger, and I think we'll eventually see this sort of come to fruition at the major league level, is he's taken really drastic steps over the last 2 years to improve as a contact hitter, to improve his approach. That was something that really sort of shined in AAA this year and even at points last year, especially coming back off of the injury, where I think some of the injury kind of knocked down some of the overall numbers and people maybe weren't as excited about Barger coming to this year as they should have been. He's a really good offensive player. There's definitely above average power there, if not potentially plus at peak. And he makes his best contact at good angles. I mean, he's able to elevate the ball when he does hit it hard. It's not a lot of worm burners and that sort of thing. Not a tremendous athlete, but he can run enough. I think because of his easy plus arm, which I think you guys have probably seen quite a bit already in the major. He's a guy that, they moved to the outfield because the arm was so good. If there's a log jam here in the infield, he's a guy that's athletic enough to play a corner infield spot. And they know he has that rifle out there when it's needed.
Yeah, he threw one. He didn't even have a running start. He took a good step into it, but he was basically flat-footed on the catch in right field and threw one 100.6 miles an hour from like a, catch and then one step, let it fire. It was pretty cool. It's the hardest thrown ball by any Blue Jays outfielder in the StatCast era. And it was like his first game in right field, I think. So pretty good stuff. So the other guy, and we've talked about these guys a lot together because they dealt with something similar positionally. They are both loud contact guys and hit for power in a way that not a lot of guys on the current Blue Jays roster do. Addison Barger got the call because he can play some corner outfield when Kevin Kiermaier went down. Aurelvis Martinez, if we were looking purely at the bat,
was probably making even more of a case to come up. He homered again yesterday. He's got 8 home runs in his first 25 games this year. Got the bump to AAA last year and looked okay with that adjustment, but has really been off to a nice start here. What have you liked about Aurelvis, and you know, how encouraging is it to you that as he's elevated levels here, we haven't seen that strikeout rate come back up quite as much as maybe the fear was?
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a few things at play, and I know we've talked about this before. I think the 2022 assignment to New Hampshire was just overly aggressive.
Right.
You know, sort of over his skis for an entire year there. What we've seen since the first 2 weeks of last season, where he did struggle, I think, dealing with some of the cold weather up here in the Northeast, he really locked in, and it was a significant difference just in terms of his pitch recognition. This is a guy that has the ability to put the bat and the ball in the zone more frequently than I think people even realize. And it's the quality of contact there has always been there with Aurelvis Martinez. As he started to get into a more like professional approach in terms of not swinging at every strike that he sees, not trying to hit those balls above the zone or just inside or outside the plate, taking some of those pitches, making pitchers work. And that approach has really translated over the last 2 years. I mean, we saw him struggle a little bit when he first came up at AAA last year. The approach locked in. He got comfortable. He got his sea legs under him. The second half of that time at the end of last year in AAA was really good. This year, we've seen him take another step forward as a contact hitter. The approach is still there. He's hitting for more power than he ever has in his career. And I think we're really seeing him just turn a corner at the plate and just become a very well-rounded hitter. The skills, the abilities have already always been there. Now we're seeing, you know, average contact skills with above average swing decisions and easy plus power, if not double plus. And he's a guy that we talked about with Barger. He's a guy that really knows how to elevate his best contact. That's never been an issue for Martinez since he stepped foot in the United States. Is he a great defender? No, but I think that, you know, he's taken the second base enough. I think he can be a fringe average defender there. And the bat is more than enough to cover it. And we're not talking about a guy who's a real butcher in the field and just a below average athlete. Still, you know, sort of an average athlete, I think moves better than people think he does. And, you know, for all the concerns about his hit tool, he's never had a 30% strikeout rate in the minors for a full season. And I think that says a lot.
Yeah, it's at 23.9% right now. So if you were looking, you know, last year, one of the things we tracked was, hey, it had been 29% that year at AA where he was only 20 and it, in your estimation, was a very aggressive placement. And then his repeat year there, he gets that down to 20%. Like he trimmed it significantly. He gets the bump to AAA. Okay, it goes back up a little bit. And now it's down now that he's repeating AAA. So I think you can see in the obviously the power is the power, but in the underlying statistical profile as well, once he gets used to a level and a guy who's still like he's not even 22 and a half yet. This is still a really young guy. So it's nice to have that level of excitement there. 7 errors in 21 games. I know errors aren't everything, but still learning the second base position, we'll say. Very quickly before I let you go here, Jeff, I only got a minute left with you. I watched an Alek Manoah AAA start the other day, and he was up against Paul Skeens. What a joke that Skeens is down in the minors. What are we going to do to get this guy? Like, he has a 0.39 ERA. This has got to be the biggest case of service time stuff since Chris Bryant.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously them gaming service time at this point. I think our bigger concern just internally within Baseball America has been how he's been handled. And I'm not so sure rolling this guy out for 3-4 innings is really saving the arm. It was actually something that we talked to now a consultant for the Red Sox, Kyle Boddy of Driveline. They had Hunter Green coming off of Tommy John surgery. Something that he made a point of was, you know, they didn't cap him at a certain innings number and at a certain pitch count number. And the reason that they did that is they felt that they gave him a lower pitch count number and he was gunning for 60 or 70 pitches that hit 100 miles an hour, where, you know, what they did is he went deeper into starts. He was sitting more 97, 98. He was focusing on pitching and getting deep into starts and being efficient. And right now Skeens is just airing it out and obviously dominating doing it. But the concern is this really saving his arm? Is this really saving them innings or bullets? At this point, it's pretty clear that Skeens is a major leaguer pitching in AAA. And with the way things are going with that organization, I don't understand why they wouldn't have called him up a week or two ago. At this point, it really does feel like they're wasting bullets in AAA.
That's a tough one. All right, Jeff Ponce of Baseball America, thanks so much for taking the time out, man. We'll talk to you again in a couple weeks, I'm sure.
Absolutely. looking forward to it.
Jeff Ponce of Baseball America at Jeff Ponce BA on Twitter. Excellent resource for all things Blue Jays prospect related. And hey, maybe taking a minor league game today on MILB TV because the Jays don't play. They're off. Blair and Barker's still with you 2-4. We're still back. Tomorrow, we'll have Dan Schulman on and Ryan Spielberg's of the Apple TV Plus broadcast for tomorrow's game. It's a pretty big night in Toronto for another sport. So stick around for all your Leafs coverage all day and Bunkus and McKee and Bourne post-game as well. Also, a special happy birthday. I doubt she's watching because she lives in New York and is very, very busy. But our friend Sarah Langs, friend of the show and of MLB and MLB.com, it's her birthday. So happy birthday to Sarah. Have a great day, everyone. Go Leafs, go. I hope you're not too anxious and throwing up about it. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 11.